You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
The whole band is based around our hometown, which is like a post-industrial small town in Sweden that used to have a steel mill in the 70s. And when they closed it, the town died, basically. And it was really a lot of despair and a lot of protests, and it was pretty crazy, and it became like a ghost town. The new record is about, it's actually like a big American tech company you might have heard of called Google that are planning to build like huge server halls outside Horndal. I mean, it could be good, but it could also be pretty scary, because all we've seen so far is they cut down the woods that we used to play in when we were kids, and they want to take cooling water from the lake that we grew up swimming and fishing in. So we just felt that, is it happening all over again? Is the devil back in Horndal? But this time he wants to drink our lake.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope that you've been having a glorious week so far. I most certainly have been. Before we jump into today's episode, I would just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to rate it and write a review. Why? Why do I want you to rate it and write a review? Well, that's because when you do that, more metalheads and people just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Because when someone's looking for a new podcast to invest their time in, what do they do? They scroll down, they read those reviews, they check out the ratings, and if this podcast has a bunch of sick reviews that reflects their interests and stuff that they love, they will most likely give that podcast a chance. So you could be the person that helps sway someone to become a future Vox and Hopshead, and that would be something that I would be extremely grateful for. Now, on today's episode, I'm with Pontus Lavon of Horndal. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops, episode number 267.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm with Pontus Lavon of Horndal. Pontus, how are you doing? Let's start with a simple question. How are you? How was your today?
It's very good. It's cold and dark here in Sweden, but it's always cold and dark in Sweden, so it's just a normal day.
That's what makes the metal so good. Same thing exactly. Here in Montreal, although it is beautiful today. Beautiful today, like 18 degrees, but yet 4 days ago, it was like -2 and it snowed a whole bunch. The yin and yang of Montreal spring. I love it.
Yeah, but it's a classic. We have the same, like the April weather. It's really sneaky.
I love it. Let's dive into darker waters. How did you cope with the glorious year of 2020, which is now behind us?
I'm sorry to say it, but I think this plague was kind of great for me personally. First of all, we had our second child last year, which was super weird because it was in April, which was the worst month, at least here in Sweden. And I mean, when you have a kid, it was my second daughter, and when you have a kid, you're pretty isolated anyways, right?
That is correct.
So that was fine. When you have a kid, you're a boring person that can't hang out with anyone and you can't go on tour. At least it's a big hassle. So that wasn't too big of a problem. Anyways, I had something to blame sort of, this time. For us, we were in recording mode sort of anyway. And this whole situation, I think it affected the album in a good way, because we had a lot more time. I was scared shitless at first because we had the studio booked and everything. Studio Grandal here in Stockholm. It's a very nice studio. Great like metal bands record. I mean, people come here from over the world. It's Sepultura and Carcass and Creator and big name. So it's a nice studio and had the time booked. And But then as we were coming closer, it's like, can we even be in the studio at the same time? Hmm. Is that going to be safe? And I was worried, since I was going to have a, it was just a couple of weeks away from the birth of my child. So I'm like, if I get sick, or at least if I show any symptoms, if I like have a booger in my nose, they won't let me in the hospital. Mm-hmm. At least that was the thing here in Sweden. So I was pretty worried about that. And then our producer, or the guy who recorded the album, he had some sort of condition that made him like extra vulnerable. So we decided to, normally we with something, it's not super common, I guess, in the metal world nowadays, but we normally record everything live, but this time we just couldn't do it. Hmm. So we just did, I mean, I'm the drummer and like the main songwriter in the band. So I had all the songs ready and I just went into the studio and recorded the drums by myself. And then we put everything on top. But then we had a lot more time to get we got like a guy, a classical percussionist from the symphony orchestra here in Stockholm. We got like horns. We got a lot of shit because all the musicians, they were out of work, right? Yeah. They had a lot of time. They just wanted to play.
Yeah.
So, we sort of got a more elaborate record this time, I think, thanks to this virus that, of course, I mean, it's mostly sad and tragic and catastrophic, but for creatively, it's been good. It just sucks now because we released the album, we can't play. Mm.
Absolutely. It must have been very strange to go from doing a full band all together, tracking live off the floor like people used to do it, to having to be by yourself. Was that strange to not be able to vibe with your fellow musicians the way you normally do?
Yeah, it was strange at first. But on the other hand, the first album our previous album Remains, it's our debut album, and that had a lot of that debut album energy. You know, it's sort of like it's a jam space product more. Yeah. So we just went into the studio and sort of like hashed it out, and that was great. I love that about like debut albums had that sort of energy. But this time, yeah, I mean, I was alone with Carl Daniel Lidén, who recorded the album, so that was strange. But on the other hand, my older brother sings and plays guitar in the band. And we're like cats and dogs, you know? So it's kind of nice to like, because he just wants to go on. He's like, that's finished. It's good enough. Let's go. So, which is good because it pushes the band forward. And I'm more like, no, it's not good enough. Let's do it again. So I this time I could just be in the studio by myself and decide everything. So that was magical.
Curious if now you have done both things for Horndal, for the next record, are you guys going to go back to live off the floor? I know that I'm thinking way, way in advance, but I'm just curious. Or are you going to continue this way now?
I mean, it's hard to tell. I think one reason why this worked is because Carl Daniel Lidén, who record the album, he's a drummer himself. So I could really vibe with him, and he really understands my style of playing and our sound. So I think that was great. So I mean, if we do the next record with him, we could definitely do it like this another time, but if we do it with somebody else, maybe it will be feel more like safe to be all of us in the same room. We'll see.
It's something that a lot of people that just listen to music don't understand, the relationship that a band has with its producer.
Yeah.
It's something that has to mesh, it has to work. And I'm lucky with Cryptopsy, obviously. Chris, my guitarist, records everything. I've worked with him for just about any release that I've put out, just about. So we have a nice symbiotic relationship when it comes to being in the studio together. So a lot of people don't understand that connection that a band needs to have to you know, capture this visions that we have in our head that we want to share with the world.
Yeah, and I mean that's super important, because I mean it's weird, you go into the studio and then you're supposed to record something that's going to last forever. So you need the atmosphere to be perfect. And I think, I mean, I've done that with other bands where I just recorded stuff where you don't feel like relaxed at all, and I mean, of course it's me listening to myself, but I believe I can hear it on the record that we weren't in such a great mood during that period, and that sucks. So it's super important.
Absolutely. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends, talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. Now, Horndale just dropped a brew, and I'm hoping that you have it right now, and we're going to share it together. Present this beer to the world, please.
Yes, I do have. It's our own beer. It's called Lake Drinker Rusty Ale, and Lake Drinker is the name of our album that came out April 9th on Prosthetic Records. And Rusty Ale, the rusty comes from, because the whole band is based around our hometown, which is in, like, a post-industrial small town in Sweden that used to have a steel mill in the 70s. And when they closed it, the town died, basically. And it was really a lot of despair and a lot of protests, and it was pretty crazy, and it became like a ghost town. So hence it became a rusty place. So that's the idea. And the new record is about, it's actually a big American tech company you might have heard of called Google that are planning to build like huge server halls outside Horndale, our hometown. And, it could be good, but it could also be pretty scary, because all we've seen so far is they cut down like the woods that we used to play in when we were kids, and they want to take cooling water from the lake that we grew up swimming and fishing in. So we just felt that, fuck, is it happening all over again? Is the devil back in Horndale? But this time he wants to drink our lake. So we just had an idea, like, what if we can make beer out of from the lake water? So we found some guys that have a teeny, I don't know if you can call it a microbrewery. It's like, what's below micro?
A nano thing. Like, a nano.
Yep. Yeah. It's below that even. it's super tiny. But they went along with this stupid idea, because, I mean, lake water, you have to filter it, so, try to clean it up, right? So they did their absolute best, and they made it's sort of a, my only brief to them was like, make it rust color and then you can decide what it should taste like. But from what I understand, it's like an American pale ale. And it's like, they gave me some, I don't know, I shouldn't go too far into it, but it's like, they just told me it's a single hop thing, and it is like a citrusy, like blood orange kind of vibe, flowery. Yeah, that's pretty much all I know. I mean, I love beer, but I'm not into the details. But I'm so happy we got this beer out. And we just made a few. We didn't make, we made like 200 bottles or something like that to start with. And we sold out immediately. So, but I have the last one here. It's actually the absolute last one.
Oh, I'm honored. I'm honored that you're going to share that with
yes,
me.
And it's perfect. Yeah.
Killer concept. I think it's so cool. Cheers to the brewery. Give them a shout out. What is the brewery's name?
Oh, sorry. It's called Piratens Brewery. So Ingare Piraten is Swedish. So it's located right outside Stockholm.
Awesome.
Ingare Piratens. Yeah.
I love it. On my side, I'm going to be drinking something very special as well. This is my brand new collab that came out 2 days ago. This is Brutal Juice, which I love. Of course, this brewery, Brewski, kills it. I'm wearing the hat too. They make these beers called Brew Juices, which are fruited sours. So they take a sour-based beer, and then they add a bunch of fruit puree to it. So I pitched them the idea of doing a brutal juice, something, you know, high ABV, 8.5%. And basically, brew juices, I drink them as my hangover cure. So if I wake up and I'm a little bit out of it, and, you know, that hair of the dog, I take it one step further and I have a brew juice because there's some fruit in it. And for some reason, that makes me think that I'm going to be okay. And I drink a cup of coffee at the same time. So I pitched them the idea of doing a brew juice with coffee in it. So that's exactly what this is. We teamed up with a local coffee roaster called Zab. They're killer. They make amazing, amazing, amazing coffee roaster. They're punk rock metal-esque vibe to them. And we made brutal juice. It just came out this week. It sold out in an hour. This is has black currants, blackberry, black raspberry, black Zab, Colombian coffee, and dark maple syrup. 8.5% Brutal Juice. I love it. Let's talk about beer. Let's talk about your first beer. Do you remember your first beer, Pontus?
Yeah, I do. I mean, where I come from, okay, we need to start with talking about, I know we don't have to talk much about it, but in Sweden, we have like an alcohol monopoly here. So you're not allowed to sell strong beer or wine or liquor in food stores. Mm-hmm. So we have these special stores. And I must say, I love them because they're really, they have so much, and they have the expertise in the guys working there is great. I mean, you can go in and just talk about any kind of food. I'm going to cook this, so help me. And they will help you. And they know shitloads about beer and wine and stuff like that. So that's, I think that, and for Swedes, it's like, if we didn't have that, we will drink ourselves to death. I mean, Scandinavians drink like fucking crazy. I mean, yeah, you must have toured with a lot of Scandinavian guys.
I've had a lot of Scandinavian people on the podcast recently, and they always start with the story, and I love it. What is the name of the specialty store? I can't remember.
Systembolaget.
That's it, yes.
Yeah, it's a very dry name.
Let's do a cheers.
Cheers, man.
Ooh, coffee comes out of the nose. It's perfectly balanced. I love it. Mm. Fruity, coffee, bitter bite, not too sweet, sour. It's amazing. Brutal Juice.
So keep nice. And mine, yeah, I can really taste the lake water in mine. It's really tasty. But my first one, it's, so you had to get, it was really hard to get someone who was over 20 to get you beer when you were, because I was like 14 maybe. But then you can get like lighter beers. I had like, you had to drink so many to get drunk. So they were like 3.5 or something like that, maximum. And it was like really shitty, cheap Danish beer called Bjørnebrygg. It was terrible. But I mean, you did anything to get drunk back then, or at least I did. So yeah, Bjørnebrygg.
How about, I know the Swedish craft beer scene is very vibrant. You mentioned that you're not too much into it, but do you ever do go out and drink craft beer, and do you remember the first craft beer that you had the pleasure of enjoying?
Yeah, I do. And where I come from in the region of Dalarna in Sweden, they were pretty early with making a craft beer in Sweden. It's called Oppigård. They have the brewery really close to my hometown. And so that's the first time I ever had like an IPA or... yeah, I remember the first IPA I can't remember when it was, but it must been it was a long time ago. But I'm really and they grew, and now they're all over the country and really like famous brewery. You can get them anywhere, and I'm a local patriot as hell, so I try to get that all the time and support them. And you, when I'm home, I usually try to go to the brewery, because they have like a bar there. It's just out in the middle of nowhere. So you go there and you have a bar, you can try out all their beers. So that's amazing. So.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Let's talk about the soundtrack of your youth. When you're growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing when you were not in control of the radio? What music did your parents or guardians or your brother listen to?
Yeah, so I come from a really like musical family. My mother played like piano and sang in choirs, and my dad was like play guitar and sang, but like acoustic guitar, more like folk kind of style. But then my brother was like a hair metal dude, and he's much older than I am. So he was playing like Thin Lizzy and Black Sabbath. This is like in the 80s, and I was really, really young. But then they played jazz and stuff like that. So I think I got like a mix of that. And I remember the first song that I really loved was it's the same thing for a lot of people, Twisted Sister, I think. We're Not Gonna Take It. I remember singing it. I have recordings of me singing it when I was 4 years old or something like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was kind of all over the place, basically.
What would have been your first love? The band that was yours that wasn't inspired directly from your brother or from your parents? What band was your first love?
When you're a kid, you listen to all kinds of shit. It's like, and then you at least for me, I didn't care what genre it was. It could be a ZZ Top song, and then the next day it could be a Eurodisco song or something like that when you're 7 or 8. But then I think I discovered hardcore music, and the Swedish hardcore scene was amazing in the 90s. So that was huge for me to, I must actually go with Refused from Umeå, because they were such so important, because the whole everything around them, the whole culture subculture thing, and the politics and how they dressed and I started reading books, and it was so big. But then I read on the back of their records, and you can read that, okay, they recorded at a place called Sunlight Studios. And then I flipped another record for my friends with a band called Entombed that I never heard. They said, okay, they recorded at Sunlight Studios. Okay, then Entombed must be good too. You know, that's the logic you have when you're a kid, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So then I sort of came into metal that way from hardcore, just because those two bands recorded the same studio.
That's amazing.
And from that, I wasn't there for the Black Sabbath thing, but I've always went sort of backwards. So from Refused, I discovered older hardcore, and from Entombed made me discover Black Sabbath, which is kind of weird because they have a Black Sabbath cover on this weird B-side thing. So, but then, so the hardcore thing was mine, but my brother, he liked Black Sabbath, so there was sort of met again, sort of, the love for that band. But then it took us 25 years to start an actual band together, which is kind of weird, but here we are.
How about your first shows? Do you remember the first live music experience you went to go witness?
Of course I saw a lot of in the town where I come from, we didn't have that hardcore scene that I was really there wasn't a scene at all, because that would happen. It was happening in other places in Sweden, because I was what I didn't really understand was that we had an amazing death metal scene, old school death metal, in Avesta, which is a really small town. And now those bands, I didn't know that at the time, but they were recording and releasing albums on really cool labels. They were touring, but to me they were just older scary dudes in leather jackets and studded leather jackets and long hair. So and they were rehearsing in the room next to ours, and you can just hear what the fuck, this is those weird scales, it's really spooky and crazy. But I think that really inspired me. But that's not the answer to your question. The first show. So I saw a lot of those death metal shows when I was a kid. But then at the same time, when I was 10 or 11, I think my brother said I can take you to a Green Day concert. That was they had just released Dookie or whatever. And I was 11 or 12 or whatever. And I could go to Stockholm, which was huge. Just go to Stockholm.
Yeah.
And then see a big show. And we had seats, but I was standing and headbanging, play air guitar the whole set. So, that was huge. But then, so I had that, and then I saw all these crazy death metal shows at my hometown, which I understood, okay, that's cooler.
How about your first time on stage? Do you remember your first time on stage?
Yeah. I had one of those weird bands you have when you're a kid, I shouldn't say that everybody does, but it's a small town, so it's hard to find four other guys or three other guys that listen to exact same music.
Yep.
So they're like all over the place. It was like one punk rock song, one like indie rock song, one like hardcore song, one death metal-ish song, you know, whatever. One cover of this stupid band.
Compromise.
So, yeah, exactly. But then we played at the youth center there. And the band name, our name was Boner.
Yes.
Not knowing what it meant. Because in the Swedish like dictionary, when you look, I mean, that's how you came up with band names. At least we
that's
did
true.
In Sweden. Like, you were, okay, no cool names on A, and then B, then Boner.
You guys got to B. That's good.
Yeah, I got to B, and then it said, it means big mistake. I'm like, okay, that's kind of funny. Let's go with that. And then my brother's like, Boner. Or your name Boner. You know what that means? And then I had to, and we had to stick with the name because, I mean, a lot of guys in our town knew it. But we played with Boner, and I remember I got really sick, and I threw up in a sort of a basket halfway through the set. That's
because you were,
so that was
because you were
show.
Nervous or because you were sick?
I was sick actually, but so that was a great opener. So I'm just happy I didn't quit right after.
It's really hard to find like-minded musicians. I was lucky being from Montreal. It was easy to find people to hang out and, you know, play the style of music that I wanted to play. You ended up having to be in a band with your brother.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it took many years. Why did it take so long? You guys are many years apart, you mentioned. How did you end up convincing each other to finally get into a band together?
Actually, I've been playing in bands and touring and recording like for all my life, but I've never played like a proper this type of like heavy music. But then, and my brother, he's played a lot of jazz music and stuff like that. But
I saw that he was on C.B. Murdoch. I really like that record.
Yeah, that's actually Frederick, another guy in the band.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So, yeah, but it's okay. Because it's weird. Because it's like, I have never played in a proper metal band. My brother's never played in a proper metal band. And neither has Eric, the bass player. But Frederick, he's sort of our alibi. He's the guy who knows. I mean, he's C.B. Murdoch. That's like, I mean, that guy can really play. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's more like close. I mean, it doesn't sound like your band, but it's much closer. Because the rest of us, we can't play like that. I mean, we play like the half the speed you guys play, or like a quarter. I can't. And I play like single bass drum on like playing an old jazz drum kit, like Ludwig kit, because that's where I come from.
I'd rather help you load in.
Yeah, it's 20-inch bass drum, so it's very light.
I love it.
But but I think for us it's like the limitations that sort of makes us, at least I think so, makes us good, because we have to really get those riffs sound good, and we need to play like really for the song and try to write good songs. So because we can't blast away in those blast beats or crazy guitar solos and stuff like that. But but my brother and I, we've always loved heavy and aggressive music, and but it was when we talked about the place where we grew up and what happened there in the late 70s when they closed the steel mill and they sort of depopulated the whole town, and it was like a they were protesting a lot in Horndal, and one way was that they set up this theater play, which is a very 70s thing, at least in Sweden. It's like, we're going to protest, let's write a theater play, and
that's
then everybody will listen to us.
It's awesome. It's very creative. It's a much more positive way to do protest than what people do nowadays.
But it's like this post-hippie kind of approach. But the plot in this theater play was that the devil was coming to Horndal to sort of crush the steel mill. And our father, he played the devil. So we're like, that's fuck. So we have this steel mill that has rusted away. And we have like Satan coming to our hometown, played by our father. So we're sort of the sons of the devil then. Must be. So we sort of have to start this metal band that we talked about now and have this concept, basically, because then we can tell like true stories. It's ghost stories, obviously, and has like a really dark vibe, but it's there's a lot of truth in them. So it's really easy to, you can just, use reality sort of. and history. So that's why. And then we got a recording slot at Steve Albini's studio in Chicago at Electrical Audio. But for some magical reason, he agreed on recording, having 2 days recording this band that he had never heard of from Sweden, that not really existed. Because I was just so pumped on and excited to play, to record with. He's sort of like a child hero for me. So that was great. So then we just, so we had 2 days. So we sort of, when we got our green light on that, we sort of, fuck, we need to get our songs together. So then we wrote like 3 songs fast as hell and rehearsed and flew over. And that's, and then we've played ever since. So that was our first EP recorded by him. And then we've made 2 full length albums.
It's funny how those rushed last songs tend to be our favorites for some reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have the same thing?
Absolutely. The ones that we were missing something and we have a deadline and we crunch to get it done. Something about those moments, that inspiration, the worry, the deadline, the monkey on our back, that just makes it perfect.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's usually the songs that you really feel are the best. They end up the worst, I think. It's usually the case because you spend so much time thinking of it and hoping, and I don't know, there's something about that, that when you actually hear it, the finish is like, it's not that good. I mean, and then you have like this shit song that you sort of say, this, like, we can record this. Like, that's amazing. That's the best track that should open the album, or that should be the single, whatever.
You so never judge your tracks, people. Just let the art come out of you, and then you'll digest it afterwards when it's finished. If you could make another beer, like I normally ask my guests, if you could do a beer for Horndal, what would it be? You've done that. But if you could make another beer that's just for you, a Pontus brew, something that would be your perfect Horndal beer, what would that beer be?
Okay, so we made a beer with lake water. I don't know, because my first idea was that, is there some way you can, like, I mean, this guy's just going to be really disgusting, but is there something like you can use from the old steel mill and like have like just dip in some like rusty metal in there, or just something?
Maybe they could harvest some yeast off of it.
Yeah. That's a great idea. No, it's not a great idea. It's going to be terrible, but it's a great idea. So it would be something crazy, I think. But actually, the beer that we've made, really, the scale was tiny. But there is another, there is a brewery in Dalarna, the region we come from, that really liked the idea and liked the beer. And they want to... they're interested in picking it up and making sort of a bigger scale. So I'm really hoping for that, because that means that people can order it from Systembolaget, the monopoly place, all over Sweden. Because now it's like you can only get it in Horndal, sort of. So, and then we'll see. We'll twist the recipe a bit. And
Well, if it's a mono hop, you can mess around with different hops, which would make a different variants of the beer to bring in different hop profiles.
Yeah, it's because this one, Amarillo hops.
There you go, Amarillo. Yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah,
great hop. Lots of citrus profile. You're absolutely right. I'm very lucky. I get to do these podcasts. I get to have conversations with musicians all around the globe. And right before I sit down in this chair and I get ready, I'm like, is the artist going to connect? Are we going to connect? Are we going to click? Are we going to have a good time? Am I prepared enough? So this is how I've been filling the void of not being on stage. How do you fill the void of not being able to perform?
I mean, we knew when we recorded the album that we probably won't be able to play live. So we tried to I think about this band and 24 hours a day, sort of. So we just try to come up with other fun ideas. So, I mean, one was the beer, and another was we made this website so you can pre-listen on the album, but it was just GPS restricted, so you can only listen to the album in Horndal.
No, that's so cool.
Yeah, because the guitar player, or the guy from CB Murdoch,
yes,
he knows how to code shit. So he knew how to build that site. Because we all, I mean, the whole band is just a tribute to our hometown. Because on the last record, we went to, we don't live there anymore because we can't find work there. We can't play in the band. But last time we went there and we played the album at the one bar that they have, just like 2 weeks before the release. So they could, because we want them to hear the album first. This time we couldn't do that. So we just made it digitally. So we made it work. So it was really cool. And people like travel to Horndal to listen to the album on their phones.
That's so cool.
So that was, so try to come up with stuff like that. And then just keep on writing mean and sludgy and deathy riffs. I mean, basically, I mean, you have to fill your time with something.
We have to. Yeah. If not, we end up enjoying too many of the like drinker rusty ales. And then, you know, this, you know, it probably doesn't happen to you very often. We're going to wrap this up with one last question, Pontus. It probably doesn't happen to you very often because you're very busy. You're focused. You're always thinking about how to make Horndal better. But every once in a while, it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure? This right here is mine. What is your hangover cure?
Oh, the thing is, I have young kids, mm-hmm. so they wake me up super early in the morning, which is terrible. So
it's brutal.
I mean, this year I haven't slept at all, so I feel like shit every morning. Mm-hmm. But then, I've tried to come up with something that's not boring, that's not coffee, that's not. I think a coffee, and if it's a weekend, and if I can like squeeze in like a beer, it like maybe if I can push it to like 4, that's like fine. And then it's weird, but it just works. I was really curious about, is our citrus, or what did you say, like fruit, is that better for a hangover cure? Is that a
hangover is basically just dehydration, massive form of dehydration, and a lack of certain minerals in your body because you pee so much, right? So you just need to pump yourself full of water. But if you have a beer, it's just sort of numbs the pain a little bit. And then the secret is that you can only have the one beer, which most of us don't end up doing. We end up having a second hangover.
Exactly.
But citrus is good. Yes, citrus feels good because it's juicy, and you're getting some of the sugars, and that feels good too as well. And the liquids, we just need to pump hydrate as much as we can.
But so that's clever to make, like you did, a big and strong beer.
Mm-hmm.
Or with hot, you're a genius.
8.5.
Yes.
Brutal juice. I love it. Pontus, thank you so much for taking the time, hanging out with me.
Thank you.
Talking about your life, music, and craft beer. Everyone, please go listen to Lake Drinker. It dropped on April 9th via Prosthetic Records. Pontus, I had a blast. I'm stoked. Next, if you ever come through Montreal, if I come out in Sweden, hopefully soon, we'll hang out. We'll drink some beers. Thank you so much.
Definitely. Cheers. Thanks for having me, man. Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. I had such a blast connecting with Pontus. I really, really enjoyed hearing all about how he has transformed this concept for a record into a craft beer. I think it's absolutely amazing. Love it when bands do that. I love it when anyone does that. When a craft beer has a story behind it, it really, really connects with me, and I think that's super cool. I also enjoy the record. If you haven't checked out this new Horndal record, Lake Drinker, go do it. It's a sick record, and it deserves your attention. Thank you, Pontus, for hanging out with me. I can't wait to share a craft beer with you once again. in the future. Now, if you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should most definitely sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You could do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened throughout the past week in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all of the details for any episodes which I have dropped throughout that past week, if I have been a guest on someone else's podcast, as well as all of the information for any cool projects that I have in the works, as well as the updated links to the live interview Thirsty Thursday virtual hang, which I am pleased to announce that my guests for next week's Thirsty Thursday virtual hang on June 3rd are two of the members of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast crew. The great Mihaela Petrescu and Chris Kells of the Agnes will be joining us to talk all about them joining the crew and talk about themselves. Of course, it's going to be an absolute blast. You will also get, when you sign up to the mailing list, the updated links to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, which is available on both Apple Music and Spotify and is curated by my man, Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself. Do yourself a favor, sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast's mailing list, because there's so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, and I do not want you to miss a single thing. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I hope you have a glorious weekend. I am looking forward to relaxing a little bit. I'm looking forward to hosting Voivod's Hypercube Session 2 after party. That's right, that's coming up this Sunday. My co-host is Zach Blair of Rise Against, and we're going to have a blast. I can't wait to hang out with all of you Voivod fans and enjoy some craft beer right after that live stream ends. There are still some tickets left. You can grab those right now via the link in the description of this podcast. It's going to be a blast. I'll be back next week with 2 episodes, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops hits.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.